You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
At the opening of Adam Ross's debut novel, Mr. Peanut, his protagonist, David Pippin, makes notes for a book he's writing about the ways he could kill Alice, his wife. She could be hit by a train, struck by lightning, or maybe crushed by a helicopter falling from the sky. And then, just 20 pages into Mr. Ross's novel, Alice is dead. Is David responsible? It's a question that two detectives who have their own histories of marital troubles set out to resolve. The book is published by Knopf, and I'm very pleased that it brings Adam Ross to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
And you must be thrilled with the reaction your book has gotten, a front page piece in the New York Times Book Review. And Stephen King called it the most riveting look at the dark side of marriage since Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. He said that it had given him nightmares.
Yeah.
Have you arrived when you learned that the novel you've written has caused the likes of Stephen King to lose sleep?
You know, when you hear those things, quite frankly, it's really surreal. I was in Nashville at the time, and it was simply unbelievable. What I really speculated on and what I still wonder about is what exactly gave him nightmares.
This is not a gory novel.
It's not a gory novel at all, but it's a novel of a certain kind of psychological terror, or as my wife likes to say, you know, it's a novel of a person's own mind, which she likes to say can be a bad neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about three marriages that could give anybody bad dreams.
Yeah, I mean, it's a book about marriage, and it's a book about the distances marriages travel over time, how those distances can deform or save each member of that couple. And I think in some ways it's a book about the terrors of potentially being alone and how we respond to those terrors. Because I think that it's an unfortunate truth that we don't always respond to those kinds of fears as courageously as we might think in advance, you know.
I don't know how old you are, but you're not a kid. You must have done other things before you wound up writing a novel as accomplished as this. Have you been working on it for the last 25, 30 years?
Actually, I'm only 20. I just look really old. in my early 20s, I was fortunate enough to get into two really excellent writing programs and work with really terrific writers. Richard Dillard at Hollins. And then I went on to Washington University and worked with Stanley Elkin and William Gass, mm-hmm. Reginald McKnight, Robert Coover was there. That was great. But then really, you know, I kind of went into the woods, by which I mean I had to earn a living. And, you know, in my development as a writer, I wasn't really there yet. So I worked first as a journalist in Nashville. At the Nashville Scene, which is really sort of our Village Voice. And it was incredible training to write stories of varying length. And then, you know, as a New Yorker, gone south to, learn about a city in a newsroom of very committed, very smart people. And then I taught for years. And that's its own kind of training because you have to – holding the attention of – I taught in an all-girls school. Holding the attention of young women is a challenge.
Well, but this is a very complex book, so I'd imagine it took you quite a few years to work out complications.
It took me many years. I mean, the way the book started, which is an interesting story – you know, in 1995, which was actually right when my wife and I left for Nashville, my father told me about my second cousin who had died had supposedly committed suicide under very suspicious circumstances. She was morbidly obese. She really struggled with depression, and she suffered from lethal nut allergies. And according to her husband, who was the only witness to her supposed suicide, conveniently, he came home one afternoon. She had a plate of nuts in front of her. They got into an argument. She shoved the nuts down her throat. She'd hidden her EpiPens, conveniently. Mm-hmm. And that was that. And I was thunderstruck by that story. And then really my development as a writer began there because I drafted three chapters that really resembled the beginning of this book. And then a long organic process ensued.
And David Pippin claims that his wife, Alice, ate the peanut that killed her deliberately, knowing it would kill her. But the detectives think that he killed her by forcing the peanut down her throat.
His finger is badly bitten, which is which also in the novel one of the his finger is badly bitten, and he claims that he was trying to clear her airway, which is a suspect story as it is. But also that's one of the images. It's a very violent image to me. And it's one of the images that echoes the Shepherd murder. There's a detective named Sam Shepherd who's based on the famous Sam Shepherd case.
And in fact, you pretty much give him his history.
I do. And the thing is that, you know, I think one of the most horrible details about the Marilyn Shepherd murder was that her upper incisor was broken and she probably bit her attacker. So there was an intent to like echo those things.
How long had David and Alice been married when she died?
They've been married 13 years. And that, you know, they've been married 13 years. They are a childless couple. And that was something I was really interested in exploring because they are to me in a state of a kind of marital purgatory. It's not that I'm in any way, shape, or form negative about couples that don't have children, but my wife and I, who met very early in our lives, I was 24 and she was 19. We waited for 11 years to have children. And it was a very interesting time because as we were cruising along in our own careers, we suffered from what I would call just the habitual. I mean, we lived these very regular patterns day in and day out. And I think at that when you're married for that long and you do the same thing over and over again, you long for the new.
Well, this book can't be called autobiographical, and yet you did meet your wife the same way that David and Alice met.
That's correct. We met in a Hitchcock seminar at Hollins, where she was an undergrad and I was a graduate, and so graduate student. And so I would say that, you know, there are only about two really truly autobiographical things in the novel, and my wife and I really did fall in love to, people like, watching Anthony, watching Tony Perkins, Norman Bates, absolutely kill Marion Crane. So it was sort of a lovely, morbid beginning.
And you're a fan, I hear, of Alfred Hitchcock, also of M.C. Escher.
Yes.
And to some degree, this book merges those two interests.
Well, you know, with respect to Escher, you know, to me, marriage feels at times like looking at an Escher does, because you look at an Escher like ascending and descending or, predestination or any of his other very complex patterns, and up suddenly becomes down in a nanosecond. And I think similarly with marriage, when we here we are with the person to whom we decide to wed our lives, it can be you can begin the day in a state of utter bliss and on a dime because you know this person so well and because your emotional language is so dense and fraught at times, that can change just as suddenly. And so that loss of perspective is something I wanted to investigate in the novel.
Well, I've seen this book described variously as a murder mystery, a love story, and a puzzle. And when you started writing it, what did you think you were setting out to do?
Initially, I thought I was writing a kind of murder mystery that would be more literary in terms of an exploration of character. But it did become more of a puzzle as I figured out how I wanted to incorporate both Hitchcockian themes. And as I developed David's character as a designer of video games, I wanted to have
based on Escher.
I wanted to have that video gaming element in it where, some of the writers like Nabokov, who've really influenced me, ask the reader to participate in the construction of the book.
Well, the complex structure mimics that of a Mobius strip. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming you got that also from Escher. He did that famous woodcut in 1963, Ants on a Mobius Strip.
That was absolutely influential. The Mobius strip to me, which is a one-sided, one-edged, non-orientable surface that looks as if it's two-sided.
Because it's got a twist in it.
Because it's got a twist. It's got that half twist.
And it suggests infinity.
It suggests infinity. It certainly doesn't suggest you know, anything like change, because it has that cyclical, circular quality. Whereas we like to think in relationships and with respect to ourselves that we can change, which is a sort of a linear image, right? But with respect to the Möbius strip, marriage to me is like a Möbius band, because we, you know, a Möbius band, if you put two figures on it, they're on the same side, but it looks at times like they're on different sides. And that to me is the dreadful paradox of marriage. I mean, we can drive each other crazy being on the opposite sides.
My guest is Adam Ross, whose novel, Mr. Peanut, is published by Knopf. Would you read a bit for us?
Sure.
And then we'll get into the fact that characters are named Mr. Möbius. And as we said, Sam Shepard, the man who was convicted in 1954 of murdering his pregnant wife, Marilyn, later exonerated, and who never became a detective as far as I know, but did try his hand at wrestling at one point.
That's right. And talk about an American detail. Talk about there are second acts in American life, however embarrassing. I mean, he did become a pro wrestler. He married the daughter of a promoter and was for a few years Killer Shepherd. Can't make that up.
Yeah, it is kind of tasteless.
Anyway, here we go. This is Ward Hastrell, one of the detectives whose wife has gone to bed for 5 months and without any explanation. And this is Hastrell expressing why he how it's changed him. He missed her when he was out in the world, true, remembering how she once took his hand or arm without asking, or slid up behind him and held him around his waist, or whispered in his ear things they might do later. But now he always knew where she was, at home, in bed. Yet after the I'm home and the dinner making, the eating and the how was it, the dishes, the trip to the freezer, and the sound of whiskey tinkling over the ice cubes, a longing sometimes came over him as he sat there in his favorite chair, a longing for Hannah that he didn't completely understand, a longing not just for the woman he'd married, but also for a time when the present didn't press down on him, hunching his shoulders and tightening his back, a longing, he surmised, for youth, though it was much more complex than that and involved a state of mind he could no longer remember, an Alzheimer's longing, disorienting, ephemeral, irretrievable. The feeling, as when someone bumped into you in a packed subway car, was completely new and unexpected and uniquely terrible. It was a longing for what it felt like when they'd first fallen in love. Is this, he wondered, what it means to grow old together?
And his attempts to get her out of bed can get rather funny. He tries to starve her and then even to sell their furniture out from under her. There's another character. Well, none of the novel's characters are particularly likable, and I always wonder about living with unlikable characters for the length of time it takes to write a novel. I assume this took you quite a few years.
I think that's a great question, because I think, you know, Nabokov's famous pedophile Humbert isn't likable, but he writes enchantingly about obsession. I think that the characters in this novel, what makes the novel readable or compulsively readable, is that these characters are recognizable. You know, I wanted to, in tracing the lives of these three married couples, I wanted to create for the reader an effect of recognition where the reader reads about Ward Hastrell and his wife, or Sam Shepard and his wife, or David and Alice, and says to him or herself, yes, I've been there in my relationship. I know what that time is like.
There are some other characters. Nathan Harold is a disaster liaison for United Airlines, specializing in transportational psychology. They meet him after Alice survives a miscarriage during a flight to Hawaii. Do airlines actually have people like Nathan Harold on staff?
I completely made that up. And it was.
But it makes sense.
It does make sense. And it was my grandfather worked for the National Transportation Safety Board. And as kids, my brother and I regularly went to hearings, and I was fascinated with the, post-accident investigations. and the way in which, you know, both the airlines and the federal government deal with these terrible things. Well, in the case of my grandfather, I mean, I'm sorry, in the case of Nathan Harold, you know, I wanted to invent a character who, as it were, provided David with soft landing, which is something that we all desire. I mean, the people who love the Harold character in the novel find him to be angelic in the relief that he provides David at a time of just torturous guilt.
I have to ask you the question that I'm sure everyone asks you. How does your wife feel about this book with its bleak portrayal of marriage?
You know, that's a great question. She actually read the final draft when it was in hard copy, and she has not spoken to me since.
I don't blame her.
I mean,
she's concerned that it's given Stephen King nightmares.
She's the safest woman on the planet. There's nothing can happen to my wife without me being suspect numero uno. But, you know, she, anytime a partner embarks on an odyssey, creative or otherwise, and says, trust me, I have no idea where this is going, but it's going to work out. I will tell you that it's quite an affirming thing as a member of that couple to trust that person and then to see it come to fruition. I mean, don't get me wrong. There were moments there where she certainly wondered if I ever was going to finish, but that she was not worried about, is my husband going to kill me?
I'm sure you're at work on something new. Should we expect another complex structure, or are you going to try something a little more straightforward?
I am done with complex structures. I have a book of short stories coming out next summer with Knopf called Ladies and Gentlemen, and they are stories in very much a classical mode. The obsessive outlining that went into making Mr. Peanut come together, I lost too much sleep.
Mr. Peanut is published by Knopf. My great thanks to Adam Ross for talking with me today.
Thank you so much.